Eric Lomax, a middle-aged, bespectacled man, lies on his back on a carpet in his study.
At the beginning of time, the clock struck one. Then dropped the dew and the clock struck two. From the dew grew a tree. The clock struck three. And the tree made a door. And the clock struck four. Then man came alive. And the clock struck five. Count not. Waste not the hours on the clock. Behold, I stand at the door and knock.
Breathing hard, he stares up into space. The Railway Man, based on a true story. Day, the British Legion Club in Berwick-upon-Tweed. Mounted medals and framed military photographs adorn the walls. A group of veterans sit at long tables nursing their beer. Sitting alone at a table beside a window, Eric, sporting a moustache, flips through a thick book and runs his finger down a list. Elderly Finley, sitting between two older men, looks across the room and frowns.
Is that a new Bradshaw's, Eric? Or one of your world-famous collection of out-of-date railway timetables? I have a small problem, which I suspect this gathering might find interesting.
At a railway station, Eric hurries across a pedestrian bridge.
Last Thursday, I was returning from a book auction in Chester. And learning of a delay on the Manchester-Edinburgh line, found it necessary to make a rapid adjustment to my itinerary, leaving me just 3 minutes to change platforms at Crewe.
He runs down the stairs and, opening the door of a train carriage, he enters. As the train pulls away, Eric walks down the aisle and settles down across from Patty, a beautiful dark-haired woman reading a newspaper. She jerks as he sits and glares at him. Seeing no reaction from Eric, she continues reading. Eric takes out a railway timetable from his satchel and puts it on the table between them, then glances at her. She watches as he opens the timetable and places a piece of paper between pages.
Tickets from Crewe.
Tickets from Crewe. You're on the wrong train, sir. This is for Glasgow. The Edinburgh train
is delayed. I thought if I got your train as far as Carstairs, I ought to be in time to catch the Manchester-Edinburgh on its way up.
That's work. Enjoy your journey, sir.
Tickets from Crewe.
Could have done with you this morning in Taunton.
Straightforward enough, surely. Train down to Bristol Temple Meads, then across...
The Bristol train was cancelled.
Well, in that case, you could take it across to...
A friend gave me a lift.
I see.
And he gave me a timetable. Look at this. He marked all of the interesting things on the map.
She places the map on the table.
Did you know Warrington is famous for vodka?
It's also the birthplace of George Formby.
Is it really?
Most people assume it was Wigan. Or Formby. But it was Warrington. You know, with all due respect to your friend, if all he's mentioned is vodka, he's really only scratched the surface of Warrington. Black Prince. Remember the Black Prince? Had all his armor made there. Warrington was really the only place to go if you wanted a suit of armor. Sort of Savile Row in steel.
Goodness. Well, maybe we should get off, take a look around.
Well, if you think Warrington's interesting, you wait till we get to Preston.
They look at each other and she smiles at him. The train speeds under a bridge and through the green countryside.
Lancaster. Known as the Hanging Town. Lancaster assizes hanged more people than any other court in the land.
Except for London.
A small town and hills roll past.
That's Carnforth. That's where they film Brief Encounter, apparently. You're too young to remember that, of course.
Well, my aunt went to see it with a girlfriend and a couple of sailors, and she told me that whenever the actress...
Celia Johnson.
Celia Johnson got a bit tearful, the sailors would shout, "Come on, Trevor, give her one!" Sorry. I've gone too far. Promise I'll behave better from now on.
Later, they sip hot beverages. Mm-hmm. Patty closes her lunchbox.
Well, I'd never been to the Highlands before, so suddenly, well, finding myself single again, so to speak, I thought I'd like to see them. So, I'm going to go up as far as Mallaig by train, and then I'm catching the coach to Inverness and coming down the other side. What do you think?
The West Coast is extraordinarily beautiful. You might well fall in love with it.
And if I were to fall in love, what then?
Well, instead of a coach to Inverness, you might consider taking the line back to Tindrum and changing for Oban. And from there, you can get any number of boat trips. Iona, Staffa. It's very romantic. You romantic?
About to speak, she stops short, then looks out of the window.
I have to be in Edinburgh by Wednesday. Carstairs.
Eric starts packing away his things and shrugs into his coat as the train pulls into the station.
It's very nice to meet you.
She nods, beaming.
You were an unexpected bonus.
Smiling, Eric nods and extends his hand.
Well. Thank you, Dad.
She watches as Eric gets up and walks away, slinging his bag over his shoulder. He steps onto the platform and closes the door. As the train pulls away, he pauses, staring into space.
And so you see, I'm forced to the unlikely conclusion that I've fallen in love.
Glancing over his shoulder, he watches the train pull away. At the club, Finlay stares at him with his mouth agape.
So, what are you going to do?
Eric hangs his head.
Would you excuse me for a moment?
Closing the timetable, Eric rushes out.
There are only two trains from Inverness to Edinburgh.
Edinburgh Waverley, this is Edinburgh Waverley. The train now arriving at platform one is at about 10:15.
At Edinburgh station, Eric rushes onto the platform as guards open the carriage doors. He looks around as passengers step off the train. He peeps in through a window, then steps back and spies Patty walking towards him, flicking her neat bobbed hair from her face.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. This is a surprise.
What a coincidence.
She puts her suitcase down.
Are you catching this train?
Yes, I am.
Well, it's just that it terminates here.
It's not entirely a coincidence.
It's not entirely a surprise.
In Eric's kitchen.
I'm not really used to entertaining, as you'll see.
Patty gets up from the table and checks a saucepan on the stove.
What are you doing?
I was just going to get a stir.
Good heavens.
But the bottom of the pan's going to burn. So masterful.
Eric starts a timer, then sits down at the table.
Masterful, but wrong.
We shall see.
I might nip out for a Brillo pad for the burn marks on the bottom of the pan.
Don't move.
Why not?
Because I'm looking at you.
Sitting across the table, they stare at each other. Patty smiles shyly and looks down for a moment. She looks up, and he's still staring at her. Eric gets up, moves to the stove, and shows Patty the cooked rice.
Perfect.
Patty peers into the saucepan, then glances up at Eric as he precisely divides the rice into two portions with a spoon. She watches curiously and smiles as Eric picks up a single stray grain.
You're making quite a meal of this.
That was the general idea.
She watches him intently.
You know, I was wondering.
She gets up and kisses Eric lovingly on the lips, one hand on his cheek. They kiss again as her hand slowly moves down to his chest.
I've never kissed a man with a moustache before. And I don't think I'm going to kiss a man with a moustache again.
Sitting down, she looks up at Eric, a challenging smile on her face.
And if the man removed the moustache?
Yes, that would do nicely.
Eric picks up the saucepan and places it on the stove. A wild and windy day on a glistening beach. Eric playfully chases Patty around tall wooden posts marking a pathway across the sand. He catches her. As they embrace and kiss, his umbrella turns inside out and is swept away, hurtling across the sand. It settles upside down halfway between two of the markers. Their car is parked on a causeway. Patty jumps in to escape the rain. Inside, she turns lovingly towards Eric, his moustache now gone. He puts his arm around her shoulder and pulls her towards him. She closes her eyes, blissfully happy. On their wedding day...
I'm just going to keep looking into those lovely brown eyes.
Why?
I don't know. Takes my mind off the broken teeth and the shabby clothes.
Wearing a suit, Eric stands outside a small church and smiles broadly at Patty.
Not quite so shabby today, actually.
Better get them off so I don't get confused then.
I think that's a good idea.
Patty walks up to the waiting Eric. Later, in bed.
I'm so happy.
At the church, Eric and Patty walk side by side to the door, with Finlay following behind. An honor guard of the elderly veteran salutes smartly as they walk by. Later, Eric lies bare-chested on his back on a bed in a hotel room, a sheet covering his waist and legs. Eric lifts his head at the sound of the door to see a young Japanese soldier dressed in full uniform standing at the end of the bed.
Get dressed, Lomax.
In a daze and dressed in a white shirt and black trousers, Eric glides along the corridor of the hotel as the soldier follows. They walk through the dining room, ignored by waiters setting round tables. Eric continues to the revolving doors of the hotel. Still looking blank, he pauses, then, followed by the soldier, he walks out to a path through an entirely different landscape of luscious green vegetation. A little up the path, Eric stops at a bend. They march towards an enclosure with a wooden gate and white buildings beyond. The young soldier salutes to the two guardsmen outside. More soldiers in brown uniforms approach as Eric stops. He stares ahead, then is pushed into the compound by the soldiers.
Stop!
Eric is dragged past bamboo cages.
The water!
Not for you, Lomax! This way, please.
The soldiers haul him into a dark room. Back in the hotel room, Eric falls on the floor. Patty rushes into the bedroom to find him curled up like a fetus.